Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening. The Inner Game is about how we nurture and attend to our mind, body, spirit health, and how that helps us make a bigger contribution in the area of purpose that calls to us. Because these are times that are asking us to evolve beyond the systems and paradigms that are collapsing. And these are conversations with people who are committed to making an evolutionary difference with their lives from a place of balance and love and service. Today, I'm joined by Dawn Hall, author of The Regeneration Handbook, Transform Yourself to Transform the World. Dawn is also a leader in the International Transition Towns movement that began in the UK to help communities transition away from fossil fuel-centric towns to resilient towns capable of withstanding the impacts of climate change and characterized by climate resilience, localized communities, mutual aid, and robust local food systems. Welcome, Dawn.
Great to be here.
Oh, so glad to have you today. You know, one of the reasons I love getting to hear about people's spiritual journeys is because what we know about the climate predicament we are in is that the level of shift needed to respond to the magnitude of the crisis is that it will require no less than an evolution of consciousness. As Einstein is oft quoted, we can't solve the problem from the same level of thinking that created it. We actually have to go beyond thinking to a heart-focused approach. As your book title includes, Dawn, we have to transform ourselves at this very fundamental level. We have to transform our very relationship to each other and to the earth. And we have to transform the meaning of our lives and why we are on this planet to begin with. And before we were talking about, like, one of my guests on the show, Bill Plotkin of the Animus Institute in Southern Colorado, shares that our sole purpose is to figure out the unique way that we are meant to serve the ecosystem within which we live. And this is true of all animals, but as human animals, we've been taught to focus on manipulating and using the ecosystem to deliver a higher quality of life to us at the detriment of the land, water, and entire bioregion that gives us life. So, Dawn, how has the spiritual grounding of your life given you a more earth-centric or world-centric focus?
Yeah, I think it's been absolutely essential and integral to my path as an activist. I got involved in activism back in college, realizing that I had been given so much, so many opportunities growing up, and really starting to see the suffering of the world for the first time and realizing how widespread it is. And I initially got involved with the Students for Free Tibet, anti-war and anti-globalization movements at the early 2000s. But I eventually became disenchanted with that kind of conventional political activism. Not because I don't believe that, protests, direct action, petitions, political change isn't important, but the way that I saw people engaging with that kind of activism and the way I was engaging with that kind of activism didn't sit right with my own spiritual understanding and values. This kind of oppositional posture, the use of force to make change, and the focus on single issues in isolation just didn't make sense to me in a time where, we're facing so many different issues and they're all interconnected. And we need to really look at root causes. And I think, high among them is the dominant paradigm of domination over nature, of disconnection from each other in the earth. And I didn't see that kind of activism doing anything to address that. And I longed for something that I could put my whole heart and soul into. And eventually I found that through movements like permaculture, transition towns, intentional communities. They're really trying to bring the world that our hearts know is possible into being without asking for permission.
That's the big thing, isn't it? And I see this in organizations and in government structures. People wait to feel like they've been given the permission or the go-ahead to do something that's really outside the box. And it's usually not coming. We seem to be needing to listen to a different kind of authority, maybe a spiritual authority, a moral authority. I don't know, that gets tricky, but how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I don't think that, existing structures and institutions are going to encourage us in this direction because they are operating according to this dominant paradigm of the industrial growth society. And they are looking to perpetuate themselves in their vision of the future, which is one of unbroken progress and expansion. But of course, that's not possible on a planet with finite natural resources that is already struggling to support 8 billion humans. If we want to not just reform current systems, but actually create new alternative systems that are rooted in a completely different set of values, the set of values that places profit above everything else, but values rooted in sustainability, interdependence, regeneration, we're going to have to have the courage to, step outside the boxes that we've been handed and to color outside the lines.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I think that spiritual practice helps us expand. It helps us to grow at such a fundamental level that we know is needed to make this kind of shift. Can you speak a little bit about your experience of, say, something like meditation? How does that expand our ability to include those the values you've spoken about? Because it, inclusivity, as we've been shown as human beings, is a pretty challenging thing for us to really practice, to really include all others. To include all living creatures, all of life, in our decision making. How does that get supported through spiritual practice?
Yeah, I've been practicing meditation and studying Tibetan Buddhism as well as other spiritual traditions for my entire adult life. And yeah, it's helped me to question, to to see my conditioning as part of this culture, first off, and to question it, and ultimately to let go of a lot of it, because I think so much of that conditioning towards, only looking out for ourselves and, you know, those in our small circle of care. Yeah, that's drilled into us in this culture from a very early age. So being able to let go of that, to step beyond that, but also that there's, to realize that there's something else out there, that this dominant culture, as monolithic and inevitable as it seems,
right,
is really an aberration in terms of human history.
Yeah, it's so true.
There are indigenous cultures that are, you know, based on entirely different set of values that have sustained themselves and sustained their ecosystems and even enhanced their ecosystems, mm-hmm, over thousands of years. And this particular culture has been tearing all of that down in just a few centuries.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, yeah, when we open up, when we connect with the core of who we are as human beings, we discover that it's not selfish, that life is not nasty, brutish, in short, that actually we as humans are naturally compassionate, that we have an inherent wisdom, that we are wired for community and connection with nature. So practices like meditation help us come back to that kind of authentic self beyond our cultural conditioning. And when we do, I think we find something that is fundamentally regenerative and loving and creative.
I couldn't agree more. For those just joining, this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. I'm talking with Dawn Hall about cultivating personal and community resilience. If you follow and appreciate The Inner Game and the other great programs on KDNK, we're in the midst of our membership drive, so please support our efforts by going to kdnk.org and hit the donate button. KDNK is an important part of our resilience of our community, creating greater awareness of resources in our community and deeper connections between people and organizations, and a lot of joy. So go to kdnk.org and donate now. Dawn, I always love to ask guests, what's helping you currently? Like, what's a growth edge that you're up against? Because I know anyone who has a spiritual practice and is committed to this work is committed to a lifetime of growth, and that's just never ending. So what's up for you lately?
Yeah, I think my growth edge in all of this has to do with my upbringing in a kind of white middle class, upper middle class culture that is very conflict avoidant and overly polite. And, you know, I think that that is something that's also constitutionally suited me throughout my life, that, you know, I prefer to get along with everybody. And, yeah, I think I'm good at being the peacemaker, the diplomat. But I'm noticing that more and more I'm being called to courageous, to speak my truth in a way that, yeah, doesn't hurt others, that, you know, isn't blunt for the sake of being blunt, but being able to cut through, a lot of the dysfunction that we sometimes see, even in groups, you know, working for social change, even in movements, pushing for a better world, and to be more bold and daring in this work. I think that, you know, what we're currently doing isn't working. The many different challenges, you know, some say polycrisis, that we're facing is overwhelming our ability to respond to it. And so I think for those of us who are engaged in this kind of work, and really for all of us, that we need to be bolder. That we need to not hold back, not be too humble, not be too self-effacing, that we have to, you know, speak on behalf of the earth and people that don't have a voice, that don't have much influence in this culture, and really be confident in our convictions and speaking out for sustainability and justice. So that definitely cuts against my upbringing and my constitution, but it's something that is, I think, a natural evolution of my path.
Boy, that resonates, Don. That's something I feel like I've been grappling with my whole career as well. You know, that balance between knowing sort of how far to push, you know, how do you keep people with you, but inspire them to go beyond where they feel like they usually stop, and including myself in that in a big way. Yeah, I think we are enculturated so much. You know, Werner Erhard of Est talks about this so much, of, you know, so much of our attention are around being liked. How are people seeing me? Do I look okay? Am I doing it okay? You know, what's my, you know, am I measuring up? And that just keeps us so limited.
Yeah. Yeah, it keeps us small and domesticated. And yeah. I think these times are calling us to be a little bit wild.
Yeah.
To, yeah, step outside of the mainstream and take some risks for the future.
Yeah.
You know, and not to do that out of aggression or ego, but to really have that come from compassion, you know, maybe fierce compassion, but staying rooted in compassion. And even then, I think it's tricky, and we need to be careful that we're not fooling ourselves. But yeah, I think that That's a good growth edge for a lot of us to be working with at this time.
Yep. You know, I wanted to ask you a little bit about local food systems, because it seems like in the transition movement, almost universally, there's a starting point for communities in inquiring into the health of their local food system or even the existence of it. It's very rare to find anything resembling a robust local food system. But many places are starting to focus on that more. What do you see as the cascading benefits, to use a permaculture term, of local food system work?
Yeah, there's so many. I think focusing on food is a natural place to start for anybody wanting to build more resilient and regenerative local communities. It's a fairly easy entry point. Everybody can grow a garden. Everybody eats and can support farmers market once a week. Purchase a community-supported agriculture share. Get to know your local farmer. It gets us to connect and interact with nature, with the earth. It's something that is, you know, fundamentally healthy, something that can save us money or can launch a wide variety of social enterprise, build community through the sharing of seeds and plants and produce. And it just, brings a lot of happiness and beauty. Whenever I'm outside working in my garden, I watch the people walking by and everybody has a smile on their face. They love to see food growing and giant sunflowers. Mm-hmm. It's such a human point of contact. Food is really at the foundation of our culture.
Yeah.
And it's also something that, you know, we can't just flip a switch and move instantly from a highly industrialized, globalized food system that's highly dependent on vast monocultures and heavy machinery and pesticides and herbicides to a regenerative ecological model of farming. Takes years to rehabilitate soil that's been damaged. It's going to take time to redistribute land and figure out, you know, new ways of relating to land that makes it possible for young people to go into farming and to make it economically sustainable for them, to train those new farmers, to get things up and running. So we can't wait until there's a crisis in our food system. We really need to be building that resilience as much as we possibly can right now, even given the current economic conditions where industrial food is so cheap, which makes it hard to compete with using organic and regenerative models. But we need to find ways to do that. Otherwise, we're going to have a rude awakening.
Yeah, and it's very close, I feel. I mean, we've been hearing about the dangers of multi-breadbasket failure globally for over a decade now, and the tipping points keep getting more severe. And like you said, it does take years to put in the civic infrastructure necessary for a local food system. And I don't see a lot of municipalities really out in front of that. And I feel like it's the permission thing. Like, do we have permission to, like, make this big shift? And boy, where I would say wherever you have the ability to inspire, lead the way with that in any way, shape, or form, please do it. And like you said, everybody can grow something. It's inherent in our nature to be able to collaborate with nature in that way. I'm thinking of the many friendships that I've made now in my fourth year of growing at our community garden, and how I share a canning pot with a gal who has become such a good friend, and just how much richness that has been in my life to get to know her better and, you know, share all that we share. Well, Dawn, you're going to be visiting Carbondale November 8th and 9th and doing an evening talk at the Third Street Center on your book on that Friday, and then hosting two practical community dialogues on Saturday focused on education and one on local food. If people want to find out more about you in advance of that, how would you suggest they do that?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, being in Carbondale. People want to find out more in the meantime, they can go to my new website, evolutionarychange.org. There I have a blog. I'm sharing recordings from past presentations and interviews I've done. There's excerpts from the book. People can also go to the New Society Publishers website if they'd like to pick up a copy of the book.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here today, Dawn, and thanks for listening, everyone. You can listen to past shows on Apple Podcasts. Thank you to Peter Mayer for his music. And until next time, listen to where you are called to go bigger in service to the land. This is a spiritual practice.
Clouds are swift, rocks are ancient, mountains are high, oceans gray. Winds are restless, trees are patient. You, my child, far away. Waves are crashing, rivers churning, planets twirling.